Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Monday, June 8th, I'll be reading to you from the Daily News of Newburyport. Officials to celebrate removal of dam by Matt Petrie, Newbury. Roughly 6 months after the obsolete Larkin Dam was removed, local officials, partners, and community members are set to celebrate the restoration of a free-flowing Parker River. It came out November last year, and it's definitely a big milestone for all of the partners involved, Parker Valley River Restoration Director Neil Shea said. The celebration is set for Thursday from 10 a.m. to noon. It will celebrate how removing the dam reopened upstream habitat and migratory and resident fish, improved water quality, reduced local flood risks, and boosted public safety. Attendees will also learn about ongoing riverbank stabilization and native planting efforts that will support long-term river health. The event will include brief remarks, a ribbon cutting, and a short walk to view the restored river. Among those expect to make an appearance are Newbury Select Board Chair Bill DeMayo, Massachusetts Department of Fish and Game Commissioner Tom O'Shea, Division of Ecological Restoration Director Beth Lambert, Division of Marine Fisheries Director Dan McKiernan, State Representative Kristen Kastner, Senate Minority Leader Bruce Tarr, and Ipswich River Watershed Association Executive Director Aaron Bonnie Casey. By opening this stretch of the Parker River, we are restoring fish passage, improving water quality, and strengthening habitat from the headwaters to the marsh, DeMayo said. This project reflects years of collaboration among local residents, state and federal partners, engineers, scientists, and volunteers who believed that this river could run free again. Tarr said the removal was a practical, effective, and sound action that demonstrates good management and stewardship of the river. Among the many benefits of removing the dam are improving fish habitat, strengthening flood control, and increased public safety, Tarr said. This is the type of important effort that can be accomplished through shared vision and collaboration. Shea explained that in the short term, the dam's removal would allow the affected area to restore natural river processes. It's pretty much affected from where it was off of kind of Larkin Road back there up to 95, Shea said, referring to Interstate 95. 95 crosses the Parker River, upstream of there, and so all of that area above there was previously impounded by the dam. He said that the main species of fish they were prioritizing accommodating was the river herring. The Parker River has a pretty robust river herring run every year, and so taking this dam out is huge because before there was a fish ladder at this location, but it was really old and it didn't really function that great, if at all, Shea said. And now fish that make it up to this point have free passage to go wherever they need to go. Granted, there are still other dams on the Parker River, but even getting one out has shown to be pretty critical. Discussing the removal process, he said the permitting process helped make sure that the project could be done with as little disruption to the ecosystem as possible. Doing it the most ecologically friendly way possible is definitely what those permits tend to cover, Shea said. So at the state level, there's like the Wetlands Protection Act, which means we had to make sure that we had water quality control measures in place. He stressed that the effort was only possible thanks to collaboration, and assured that they are not just done because the dam is out. We're not just taking the dam out and walking away either, Shea said. We have a vested interest in this site succeeding as a restoration project, so going out and making sure invasive species don't take over. We're going to do plantings of like native vegetation, and we're going to be monitoring it for like fish passage and for water quality and all of those things. So we're in this for the long term, for sure. Newburyport shows its pride, by Dave Rogers. Newburyport, a panda motorcyclists, a drag queen blowing kisses from a Volkswagen bug, a small squadron of roller derby women, and roughly 25-foot-long caterpillar were among the sights and the sounds filling the downtown Saturday during the city's annual Pride Parade. Hundreds of people lined State Street, Market Square, Green Street, and Pleasant Street as participants in the approximately 30-minute parade walked, drove, or skated past. Immediately following the parade, the festivities shifted to Waterfront Park, where dozens of vendors awaited their arrival. The festival outgrew Brown Square, where it was held last year. The parade, which benefited from cooler weather, is arguably the focal point of the city's Pride Weekend celebration that kicked off Thursday with a party at the Sunset Club and continued the next day with a flag-raising ceremony held outside City Hall. Ward 6 City Councilor Mary DeLay called the parade and the Park Festival an amazing event that keeps on getting larger each year. The increase in popularity of this event is just really heartwarming for me and my fellow members of the LGBTQ community, DeLay said. DeLay gave her thoughts at the Bartlett Mall, which served as a staging area for the parade. Others spotted there were Newburyport Pride co-chair Kevin Hudson, Ward 3 City Councilor Brian Callahan, Ward 4 City Councilor Beth Trake, Newburyport Mayor Sean Reardon, and State Representative Don Shand, Democrat from Newburyport. Hudson said moving the festival to Waterfront Park gave organizers the chance to provide more live music, roughly 50 vendors, and increased visibility. We're really excited people are excited to come down here, Hudson said. It's really just a great way to be bigger and better than ever. Hudson praised the city for its unwavering support of the LGBTQ community. We have a great city to live in, Hudson said. Despite the festive atmosphere during the parade and festival and the entire weekend, Hudson said there is still plenty of work to be done to protect queer rights. We can't be complacent. History shows that complacency breeds more hatred, Hudson said. Shand said she was thrilled to march in the Pride Parade, but noted that the celebration was more than just a day to show pride. When the federal government is constantly attacking the rights of the LGBTQ community, every celebration is a protest, Shand said. Among the estimated 650 people marching Saturday were representatives from the leftist marching band, the Pride Drummers, Theater in the Open, and several area churches. There were plenty of people handing out shiny beads, stickers, buttons, and rubber rainbow bracelets. Some paraders were armed with bubble shooting pistols. One of the largest ovations came during a mobile concert performed by Plumfest organizers, who belted out a rendition of Sly and the Family Stone's Everyday People. Plumfest, which features jam sessions outside, dozens of Plum Island homes is scheduled for September 12th. Also drawing large responses were representatives from the North Shore Alliance for LGBTQ+ Youth, led by a motorcycle panda and an appearance by the Queen of the Newburyport Pride. The Future Changemakers of the World, NHS Honors the Class of 2026, by Matt Petrie. Newburyport. The sun was out and shining brightly on Sunday as hundreds packed into the World War Memorial Stadium to celebrate the graduating Newburyport High School Class of 2026. All but one section of the bleachers was filled to the brim with family members, friends, and city officials for the ceremony. The proceedings began at 11 a.m. with a sea of Clipper crimson and gold flooding James T. Stalen Field as the seniors' procession began and found their seats, all while cheers rained down from the crowd. Following the national anthem performed by the NHS band, with the state and U.S. flags billowing on either side of the graduates, Class of 2026 Student President Madeline Jackman took a moment to speak to the crowd and the rest of the class. "Each one of us will go on a different way, set a course for different careers, and choosing different goals as the end destination," Jackman said. "Today will be the last time that we are all on the same path in the same place. So as we hold up the map that got us here, our GPS asks a question, what to and where to next." She encouraged her classmates to reflect on how incredible they each are and to try and stay in touch with each other. "Sitting around you are the future change makers of the world," Jackman said. Jackman also thanked the friends, families, teachers, and officials who had come out to be with them and helped to guide them on their journeys to being graduates. "I'd like to ask the entire class of 2026 to join me in an enthusiastic round of applause for these people," Jackman said. Next to speak was Principal Andrew Wolf, who said there were many traits he admired about the class of 2026. "What has stood out to be the most of our class is your courage to navigate the psychological complexities of today's world," Wolf said. "You've grown up at a time of constant noise, endless information, opinions, and division, competing for your attention every day. Yet for all of you, you stay true to yourselves." He also spoke about the importance of preserving the past. "After watching the way all of you have carried yourself for the last 4 years, I've never felt more confident in a group's ability to do that thoughtfully and compassionately," Wolf said. He ended with one final Go Clippers drawing, a large cheer. After more student speeches, School Superintendent Sean Gallagher delivered his address, speaking about how much work each student put in to get to where they are today. "The reason you are all sitting here today in those chairs is not because you all felt motivated every single day," Gallagher said. "It's because you had drive, you had structure, and most importantly, you had self-discipline. You actually did the work when you didn't want to." Following Gallagher's speech, seniors began hearing their names to pick up their diplomas, much to the delight of the crowd, with some even sounding blowhorns. Once diplomas were handed out, there was one last speech from graduating senior London Harris, who also spoke about how her alopecia diagnosis at 7 years old taught her that life does not always go as expected. "However, my school community, teachers, peers, and closest friends have always accepted me for who I am and supported me to be my authentic self, Harris said. Seniors and staff began walking off the field about 12:15 p.m. as the school band played. Pentucket's Class of 2026 Celebrates Graduation by Caitlin D., West Newbury. Pentucket Regional High School seniors marked the end of their 4 years of learning Friday night by turning their tassels during Class of 2026's commencement ceremony. Friends, family members, and Pentucket faculty gathered on the school's football field and braved hot weather to celebrate the graduates decked out in green caps and gowns. The ceremony began with an invocation from Class of 2026, Vice President Gavin Jalbert, and a welcome from Aiden Culbert, Class of 2026 Secretary. Then the salutatorian, Catherine Wisniewski, tearfully addressed the audience and shared ideas and lessons that have helped her throughout her high school career, like listening, hoping they would benefit others. To listen is to not just understand someone's opinion, but that person themselves, which has the power to bridge the divides we see in our society today, she said. Valedictorian Madeline Grimes spoke next and praised her peers for reaching graduation. To the Class of 2026, I am so proud of each and every one of you and honored to share this moment, she said. Grimes also imparted a lesson about how graduates should pursue their dreams, regardless of whether or they feel ready, and urged them to not wait. As freshmen, we would look up to the seniors and think they were so much older and more confident than us. Now, being in their shoes as graduating seniors and definitely not feeling as we thought we would, teaches us not to wait until we feel qualified to chase our dreams. If you don't know the answer, improvise. If you're afraid, go and tackle your goals anyway, she said. Then numerous students stood as Terrence Beaton of the Pentucket Regional Scholarship Foundation read out scholarships that seniors had been awarded. Soon after, graduates rose from their seats and began to approach the stage where they were presented their well-earned diplomas by school committee chairperson Emily Dwyer and school superintendent Justin Bartholomew. After diplomas were awarded to the graduates, the school listened to a final address given by Benjamin Pierce, Class of 2026 president. Pierce reflected on his class's 4 years at Pentucket and said he hopes that his classmates will look back fondly on their high school experience. As we move into this next stage of our lives, I hope you'll leave here grateful for the time that we shared together and excited for whatever comes next, he said. Finally, Pierce asked students to move their tassels from the right to the left and face the audience, which erupted into applause. The seniors then tossed their caps high into the air, marking the end of one chapter and the beginning of the next. As I See It, A Blind Eye to State Street by Jack Garvey. Thanks to my picture appearing on this page a few hundred times these past 43 years, I gained comments from complete strangers in public places. Mostly quick compliments or stern criticisms, both welcome. It's the only job I know where competence is measured as much in opposition as in approval. Mostly, I enjoy it. Still hear the cracking voice of the fellow who cautiously approached me a dozen years ago in the produce section at Market Basket, before asking, "Was that you who wrote about Cleveland?" My usual response is, "Depends on what you have in mind." But this fellow was so shy, I had to play it straight. Yes, the Rock Hall, the lakefront, the architecture, Great Lakes, brewery, live music in public parks, dates to catch the Red Sox and Celtics. I'm from Cleveland, he managed to say. That's the first time I ever read anything good about my hometown. Lately, I have nothing good to say about the Archival Center at the Newburyport Public Library, but I am being asked why it is back in the news. My guess? Two recent letters nicely summed up by their headlines. When Stewardship Fails, May 13th, by Walt Thompson, and Archival Center is a Shell of What It Used to Be, May 18th, by Glee Woodworth. Full disclosure, both writers are my friends, and we three were among the petitioners to the Newburyport City Council to investigate City Hall's role in the disastrous moves that erased the Archival Center's volunteer program and railroaded the regionally acclaimed archivist out of her position. To their letters, I will add my own. Macaulay Threw Open the Windows, May 13th, a tribute to the former counselor upon hearing of his untimely passing. In it, I describe the moment when Macaulay took on the leading role of making the library investigation happen. What prompted my two friends to write about the formerly renowned Archival Center? Not sure. But from what I've read and heard, the list of complaints from researchers and historians who thought they could access it as readily as in the past has been growing. Complaints are now finding their way to the library's board of directors, which always includes new members who likely find that serving the mayor who appoints them and doing the right thing is a bit like joining the Trump administration. Problem is that the incompetent mayor managed to dodge all accountability for the destruction of the Archival Center, despite the findings of the investigation that, in the words of one local historian, should have been a career-ending document for him. This brings me to the question being put to me since my last column, Crimes Are Us and Other Musical Acts, May 21st. For all the ridicule I hurl at Republicans in Washington, D.C., why am I not at Newburyport's weekly Saturday rallies on High Street? I'm honestly torn. Among the many issues noted on their signs is the censorship of books. Where were the people holding those signs during the prolonged destruction of NPL? If they can see it in Florida and Tennessee, why their blind eye to State Street? Did those holding signs citing the 2019 Mueller report pay any attention to the equally damning 2025 report on the Newburyport Public Library? Some hid behind pathetic excuses for complacency, such as, there's a lot we don't know, so why weren't they asking? Even subsequent first-hand reports of a toxic work environment in the clerk's office did not stop them from endorsing the smiling mayor's re-election. And oh, how they love those photo ops with him in City Hall. Apologies to most folks at the Saturday rallies, but there are at least a dozen among you with whom I want nothing in common. If, on any given Saturday, you happen to work the weekly rally in Ipswich, instead, I will gladly answer any question or criticism of this. Thanks to my picture, I'll be easy to find, no matter if I have no idea who you are. Critique Jack Garvey, resident of Newbury, at hammlynn@gmail.com or at https://buskersdelight.home.blog. Village Talk focuses on historical research. Newburyport. Many of the houses on the North Shore have a wealth of history within their walls. As part of the Greater Newburyport Village Talks series, local resident and historian Jack Santos will outline easy methods to uncover the history in researching your home's past, meeting the people who lived there. The free event takes place June 17th at noon at the Newburyport Senior Community Center, 331 High Street. Santos highlights lessons in finding historical information about the people who once lived in a house discovered through Newburyport's If This House Could Talk event held during Yankee Homecoming. He describes simple, straightforward ways anyone can use to uncover information about former occupants of their home and events that took place there, regardless of the home's location or age. Santos is a retired technology executive who has done extensive research on the families who lived in his home since 1789 and is a member of the Newburyport Preservation Trust and founder of If This House Could Talk, http://walknewburyport.com. A complimentary lunch is available prior to the village talk, courtesy of the Friends of the Council on Aging and the Greater Newburyport Village. To reserve a lunch, call the Senior Community Center at 978-462-0430. Village talks are offered by the Greater Newburyport Village, a nonprofit at no cost for the benefit of the community. They are held on the third Wednesday of the month. For more information about Village Talks, check the event calendar at www.greaternewburyportvillage.org. Email info@greaternewburyportvillage.org or call 978-206-1821. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.